I believe there's something to learn from everybody, from the homeless person on the street to our laborers to lawyers, doctors. Everyone has something to give, and that's unique. And I really try to take that and kind of peck it away in my brain there and pull it out when necessary.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm excited to be joined by Mike Gargiulo, president of Sidnalta Construction Corp. Hey, Mike, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Eric.
Before we jump into a lot of the back and forth, I always like to start these podcast episodes with the section on good news and gratitude. Is there any like personal or professional good news or gratitude you'd like me to share or you'd like to share with the audience?
Sure. So the good news is Sidnalta is flush with capacity. So sometimes we say we're flush with work and we're working real hard. Right now we've worked down a lot of projects and backlog. And we are flush with capacity. So we're excited about the opportunities that may be out there for us because we actually have great A team to build these projects. So I'm excited about that. The gratitude on gratitude is something I live with and I practice daily, basically throughout the day. But I'm thankful for God for creating this beautiful planet that we live on here. I'm amazed by the beauty of nature and amazed by the beauty of people and how they're full of love. And just kind of keeping that gift of love in your heart is something that you have to be grateful for every moment of the day. So pretty simple stuff. Obviously grateful for my family. And as I look out the window here at an eagle fly by, as I'm saying that, that's pretty awesome. So yeah, just full of gratitude for so many things.
Awesome. I love that. And you know what? I don't even know that it was going to be a topic today, but I'm going to come back to your capacity comment earlier. But in terms of practicing gratitude every day, I completely agree and I love it. And I like to start the day by going to the gym. And I was texting my sister because she's also like, she likes to go to the gym. And one of her responses, like in passing, was just like, listen, we should just be grateful every day that our bodies function and we can go to the gym. And she was right. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I just like, in that moment, became so grateful just for the fact that I could go to the gym, right? Like not everyone can do that. And it was a really cool moment. So my gratitudes on like episode day are always to the guests for you to take time out of your day. I know how busy you are and I know what an amazing company you run. And so I just thank you for being here. My other gratitude that I will share, because you kind of prompted me with this, like right before we jumped on this, is I like to have coaches in my life. And one of my coaches is my business coach, and it's Kevin Donnelly. And you know Kevin well, Mike, and I'm grateful for him. He's really helped and shaped like a lot of what I do. Like in some ways, this podcast was inspired by him. He really pushed me to get out of my comfort zone. And I've talked about that on other episodes, but I'm grateful for him to do that and kind of continue to push me every day. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we've made some huge strides, great strides, really. And so, you know, I always like to be grateful.
Give him a call today and let him know that.
I will. Yeah. I'm going to tell him.
He's a fantastic human being.
Yeah, no, he's great.
He's great.
And Lisa's great and his kids are, you know, I know you know the family, so.
Yes.
All right, cool. So let's jump right into it. Before I ask you any specific questions, why don't you tell me a little bit more about yourself, right? Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? How'd you get into this business or how'd you get into even this industry?
So I was born into this business. My dad was the founder of Sidnalta. I was born in Freeport, New York and grew up till about fourth grade in Freeport, New York. And the construction yard was my backyard and I'd play in the backyard and slide down the construction chutes for fun and the climb scaffolding that was in a fenced-in area in my backyard as a young kid. So I really have fond memories of some dangerous playing in a construction yard. We moved out to St. James out in Suffolk County. I finished my education at Smithtown High School. Then I went on to the University of Hartford And they transferred to East Carolina University, had a bunch of friends there, and they had a construction management program there that I enjoyed. Graduated with a Bachelor of Science, and I came back to New York and decided that I was going to start working in the family business, and I was going to apply to law school. So I got into law school, I was ready to go, and I had worked a year before I was planning on going to law school. And I said, you know what, why am I going to law school? It's just going to take away my ability to learn for the next 3 years about construction. And I was concerned that I would come out with a lawyer's brain, an engineer's brain or a people person brain, and I would overanalyze every contract and every interaction, and maybe it wouldn't be the best thing for my progression in the business. So, you know, I was an assistant. I started as a laborer in high school and worked my way up through laborer to labor foreman, and then assistant super, and then assistant quality control manager, and quality control manager, and assistant safety, and safety super, and superintendent, and assistant project manager, project engineer. I basically wore every hat that you could possibly wear in the business until about when I was a vice president in 2004. My dad had been talking about retiring for several years, so we worked on the succession planning for many years. So I was taken to meetings with the bank and the bonding companies at a very young age, so they got to know me. And when he retired, he was happily retired. He handed me the keys, sold me the business, and told me where to send the check. So I was a reluctant president in 2004. I was just about 30 years old, maybe 31 at the time. And when you progress in a family business, and sometimes you get placed in a position that maybe you're not fully ready for, and you have to just kind of wear those shoes and grow into those shoes. So I had to take some time to grow into those shoes. And it did, I'd say it took several years before I was a less reluctant president.
And so being born into the business, something I totally understand. I was definitely born into this industry, as were my brother and sister. And also having, let's call it an elevated title at a younger age, I can commiserate with that. I'm going to tell a quick story, but then I want to ask you a question about it. My story is really, I must have been in like my early to mid 20s. First contract I'm going to go sign right under like my company. And I get there and the PM like looks at me. He's like, all right, great. When's your boss going to get you? And I was like, what boss? It's like, I'm here. We've been negotiating this deal the whole time. And we talked it through. And obviously it was okay because we had like, I had the staff and the capabilities to do it. But it's just, it's one of those whirlwind experiences, right? You just don't have anything to stack it up against at the age of 24, 25, 23, whatever I was.
Well, and you came into this industry with a family name in the industry, right? And you had to really separate yourself from your dad's business and say, no, this is my business. And honestly, I got to say, it took me years to fully grasp that you really were not part of your dad's business. You know, you were entrepreneurial and bold, I have to say, and you leaned in and you went for it. So congrats to you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks. I appreciate that. And to this day, there are still people that, like our marketing team or pursuits manager, if Andrew was on, he would tell you stories. But they'll be like, no, you guys are on the team. Don't worry about it. And we're like, no, we're not. We haven't been requested for any documents or anything. Like, yeah, we got Harani on the team. Don't worry about it. And Andrew will be like, we're not Harani. The question I want to ask you, because you touched on a really interesting point, and I never thought about it from my own perspective, but I feel like maybe in some ways I'm still like kind of a reluctant president. What do you think you did that like helped you overcome that? And so if you're not a reluctant president, what do you consider yourself today?
Oh, I consider myself more of a CEO today, even though I have the president's title. We have a robust staff that we've built around the organization, and really actually a co-CEO, even though my title is president. I have a partner, Larry Sipon. He was a founder with my father. He's an amazing human being. He's an amazing partner, amazing father, and friend to so many, and a very close friend of my dad's. My dad had passed, but they were very close. And in a lot of ways, he has been a mentor to me. So to answer your question about moving from a reluctant president to a CEO, it takes experience. It's just putting the time in, learning from everyone you can possibly learn from. One of the things that I personally carry is that I believe there's something to learn from everybody, from the homeless person on the street to our laborers, to lawyers, doctors. everyone has something to give, and that's unique. And I really try to take that and kind of pack it away in my brain there and pull it out when necessary. So, yeah. And then that's just experience.
I love it. I would agree that, like, and I mentioned Kevin earlier, but I think he's a big reason I kind of broke out of whatever shell I was in and the president I was going to be and the way I was running an organization to where we are today. And I know you have a fantastic team. I know a lot of the senior members of your team, great people, all of them. And we're slowly building to that. Like, I think I have an incredible team. And one of my gratitudes is almost always for them. So I should have started the show with that. But they do so much to support me and help me and care about the business. And I genuinely care about all of them, which is also a fun part of working with people that are good people. That's really great.
That's why I thought this was going to be an easy conversation, because in a lot of ways, your personality is a lot like mine. We're open. We're honest with people. We're accepting. We love to learn. We listen. So, you know, I feel like you and I are kindred spirits in that way.
Mike, so I appreciate that. And I do love all those values you shared. So why don't you give me an overview of Cynalta and what kind of projects you guys work on? I know we talked a little bit about how you got to your position, but what are you actually running or working on managing? And has that changed over the years since your dad had the business to now you having the business?
No. So the types of projects that we work on are essentially New York City and Long Island-based municipal and civic projects, mostly for the MTA and the School Construction Authority, DDC, DASNY, some of the larger public owners in the area. Our projects are complex because they're basically building in areas that are extremely logistically challenging, like the middle of 14th Street and an open subway station, or building a school on a very tight block in downtown Brooklyn or Prospect Heights, or various difficult neighborhoods to work in. But what we do as an organization truly improves the community. So at the end of the day, that is the foremost principle of the types of projects that we go after. Not to knock the whole jail system, but that was something that we were asked to get in on a lot of these opportunities that were happening, rebuilding the jails in New York City. And I just didn't think it fit what we did. You know, and have people go out and build a jail for 10 years or whatever it takes. I know that jails are needed, but like, I don't know, the length of the job would be a challenge to keep people inspired. Building a school, when that school opens and the moms and dads are dropping off these children at the school and they're crying and these kids are walking into this beautiful new school. I mean, the feeling is just, it's kind of overwhelming with the pride and joy. Or when we open a new station with a new elevator, I mean, there's ADA access to various stations and it allows people to commute to and from work and to home and to their families and doctors. I mean, it's just the ease and the joy that they have is just, it's fantastic. You know, that's what makes it worth it.
No, I love that answer. And it's funny because you kind of, you know, the name of the show is Building Better Futures. And it was kind of growing up, my dad would tell us that, right? My dad's an engineer, a civil engineer. And, you know, he would talk to us about how civil engineers, the reason it's called civil is because they help civilizations exist, right? And you get clean water and you take it for granted. And you go to school and you take it for granted. And you drive on a highway and get to work and you take it for granted, both the highway and that commercial building that you're working in. But those things take a lot of time and energy and dollars and people that really care and are passionate. And it's exciting when something opens, right? When we open more residential units to a community that needs them, or when you open a school and kids get to learn, right? I mean, what's more altruistic than that, right? Than to give a student the opportunity to learn and potentially be the next Einstein or cure a disease, right? Like, you don't know what you're doing, but you're opening up the possibility for them, where if they didn't go to school or couldn't go to school, it's not even a possibility, right? Where are they going to end up?
I couldn't agree more. So many famous people came out of the New York City public school system. Scientists, artists, business people.
Yep.
Yeah, they really leave a legacy. So this is a great city we live in, and it's important to keep it moving forward.
I always like to ask this question, and I'm going to ask it now because I think it tracks. What are some of the most like impactful projects you think you've worked on? And you gave your history of all the titles you held. So I pick from any of your career, but do you have one project or a couple of projects that really stick out? Like, I'm so glad we built that and that community is still impacted by it today. Or I just loved being a part of that team for whatever reason, you know, like you don't have to have a reason, but are there any projects that stick out in your mind as like particularly impactful?
Sure. Absolutely. PS 242. It was one of our first design build projects in Queens. And I actually happened to be on that project during the attack on the World Trade Center. I saw second tower collapse from the roof of that building that we were building. So that, it's a special project. It was the first time I was a project manager, and just kind of holds a special place in my heart because of that day. Also, the 96th Street and Broadway head house for New York City Transit. It is just, it's like a intersecting barrel vault in the center of Broadway. It's a beautiful structure. Super proud of it. It would be great if the MTA had the funds to keep it clean after all these years. So that kind of frustrates me that we build these beautiful projects and come back a few years later and they're just not maintained the way they should be and the way they deserve to be maintained. I'm really proud of so many of our projects. We've done so many great buildings. I've got to visit incredible places. I got to go to, as a child, Cinalta was repointing, I guess they call it the water tower at Jones Beach, or the pencil. So probably I was 9 years old and I got to climb the stairs on the inside of that and get to the top of it. And just so many things around the area that we built. On our website, I think there's a little diagram and little dots like all around the area, and it almost like fills up the map with all the projects we've touched.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
The story you told about climbing the stairs, one of the first projects I ever worked on, and it might have been the first contract, if not second contract, that Infinite ever won. You know, I was a project manager at Washington Square Park, and the architect of the park, I think that was his title, but he took us up to the top of the arch. And it was just one of those things, like, nobody gets to be up here, and it's just unique, right? It was
like an experience. Secret white, iconic.
It was really cool.
Monuments. Yeah, that's very cool.
I probably, like, I don't know where, but I probably saw up to, like, 90th Street. You know, it was a clear, visible day. I could probably see, like,
straight up the avenue, right?
It was pretty cool. Yeah, it was really awesome. And I do love that about our industry. I have so many buildings in the city. You just touched on, like, some important projects. But, like, you know, you drive by or you walk by and you're like, oh, yeah, I have a story about this. I know why one of the floor plates is a little low. No one else.
And I loved showing people walking through Manhattan with a group of people from out of state. We just had the Construction Industry Network, or YPO, in New York. And I took a whole group of people that were visiting for the conference and walked them through the city. And I explained all the little funny stories that, oh, this happened here. We did this, that here. And it's just great. Really, we had a lot of laughs.
I did that with my Construction Network forum too. We had a great time walking around the city. It's just such a just incredible city. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, so to build those projects, right, to build some of these magnificent projects, we have to build a lot of relationships, right? A lot of trust with different people, you know, the stakeholders, your subcontractors, your vendors, probably your architects, your engineers, the public officials. How do you do that? How do you guys as Cinalta, as a company, or you even personally, because I'm sure some of those relationships have to be at your level. What do you try to do to manage those relationships?
I think it's relatively easy. Be yourself. Be truthful. Do what you say you're going to do. Communicate if there is a problem that, for whatever reason, what you said you were going to do is not possible anymore. Get way, way, way ahead of it. Keep the lines of communication open. Always have an open door and just be a quick phone call away from any of them and any of their needs. And it's reputation, because we've been in business for over 50 years now. A lot of the relationships, they change. People, they move, they retire for whatever reason, they're no longer in a position of control or power. So you really have to take it down to the, I don't want to say the lowest, but like the people on the job that are really building it and develop those relationships from the ground. And I think it starts with just a smile and just being open and truthful and curious. Be curious about them, about what their concerns are, and how to keep the customer happy. Simple, the customer is always right. I live by it. You know, it's true. They're paying us. Let's see how we can accommodate them. Let's not fight with them. Let's get the job done for them. Let's work as quickly and as safely as possible. So it's pretty simple stuff.
Yeah, I love that philosophy. We had another guest on the show. I think it was Joe Tulamello. Do you know Joe from Gannett Fleming?
Yeah, of course.
We do a lot of work together.
Great guy.
Then the reason I brought back to that episode, I think the advice you just shared is just so important for people, especially earlier in their career, because Joe shared a story about how, you know, earlier in his career, something happened and he probably should have told everyone, but he thought he could like fix it, right? Like before it got too big or out of hand. And I don't see, sometimes transparency is the best thing, right? Let's talk about our problems and let's solve them together as a team. I'm going to day chair an event next year for our chapter. And I'm still putting it together, but hopefully we're going to do a site visit. And it's going to be about how a construction project builds trust so quickly, right? You know, in most other industries, you're probably working with the same people on the same tasks for maybe your entire career. For us, projects are 2 to 5 years, and then it's probably a totally different team. And in some aspects, people you're adversaries with on one project end up being your partners on another. And I think it's something we do really well. And I think a lot of it is thanks to what you just shared, right? It's like, be open, be honest, be yourself, and create a culture and a collaborative environment to succeed. So because we're talking about like what I consider this like great advice, especially for everybody, but early career professionals who may be like trying to figure out what is their next step in their career? How do they progress in this industry? I do like to gear part of the show towards them. I'm going to ask you some questions on that line of thinking. First one I'm going to ask you is, if you could go back in time, right? We talked a little bit about being a reluctant president and your career even prior to that, and give yourself career advice. What would you tell yourself like 25 years ago or 20 years ago, right before you assumed the presidency or assumed before you were project manager on that job in Brooklyn?
So patience. Be patient with the owner. Be patient with yourself. You're not always the smartest guy in the room. You know, I would always kind of lean towards righteousness. And I assume that the owner or subcontractor would just understand that and do the right thing, be fair all the time. It's not always the case. There's outside forces, and sometimes you have to yield to those forces to get the job done, and things are not inherently fair. And you have to be patient with yourself and accept that. Also, like, I wanted to progress very quickly. And it seemed like when you're looking out to the future, it seems like it's taking slow. It's long time. It's slow. Looking backward, my career is like, it's a flash. So be patient. Always do the right thing. And just always try to learn. Be curious. I can't emphasize that enough. It's just to be curious. Ask a lot of questions. There's really one of the things around Sinalta is really there's no stupid questions. Ask questions. That's how we all learn. Mentoring and developing the young engineers of our industry is like kind of a major focus of our corporation right now. We have a program right now where we're bringing in field engineers and we're essentially teaching these young engineers or younger engineers how to actually do their job in a real practical way. Instead of just, I mean, the jobs get crazy, they're hectic. You need to step back and think about what you did and then review. So we have one of our head of engineers kind of training younger engineers. And I sat in on the class last week and boy, I was just so proud of the job they were doing, the questions they were asking, and the leadership that is kind of fostering these young people's careers. And that's something that inspires me.
I think it's amazing that you guys do something like that. And honestly, it's probably necessary too, right? We're in a talent crunch. So trying to train up internally and get the best out of our folks is really important on both sides, right? For them to learn and be better and for us to be capable to continue to deliver.
Yeah, we can't survive as a company if we don't train people and teach them how to be better. And I mean, you can't teach responsibility, but you can guide them in the right way. You can teach them to ask questions, be curious, to follow up, always be truthful. Simple stuff. I mean, kids come out of engineering school, some of them don't know how to use a tape measure. Meet a surveyor and explain where the benchmark has to be. Or a seasoned carpenter comes in and asks them a question and they have to be able to say, I don't know, but I will find that answer out and get back to them. So there's a lot to learn. I think this industry, you can come out with a PhD in engineering and think you can go build something. I think that would be a miracle if you actually could go out and build something.
I remember I was out of engineering school. I was running my first project, running whatever APM. And one of the laborers had to show me how to set up the surveying machine. Cause I was like, wait, like I've seen this on it. I know what I have to do. I have to read the mark and I have to subtract it from my base mark where I'm at, but I actually don't know how to set it up. I only know what to do if they give it to me on paper. And he was a great guy. His name was Dominic, the laborer that I worked with on that project. But I could tell, like, every time I asked the question, he's like, and you went to college?
Yeah.
But, and in a lot of ways, the guys in the field, absolutely brilliant. I guess I'm just going to add, like, advice, like, learn as much as you can from there. Because I will say I learned so much from that crew on that first project and every crew that I worked with after that, just on what it really means to build. What are the challenges, right? Like, even laying tile seems like a simple thing. It's such an art to them, to the interior finish contractors that we were working with. And it was amazing to watch them do it and realize it's not easy. Like, if I tried to do it, like, my mortar thickness was off. It's just hard. It's not simple. And they just, you know, with the wave of a wand, it looks beautiful.
Exactly. And they do it in their sleep, basically. They do the calculations. They know how to lay out a room. They do the math.
Yeah.
They light it up. And they know where to start.
So I did want to ask you about earlier, you wanted to talk about like the A-team capacity, and we talked a little bit about the MTA and SCA, and where do you see like the budgets going now? What are your thoughts on that, just in general?
Wow. It is 3/18/25 right now. There is a lot of moving parts with this new administration, and I think there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty in the public funding of construction project space. I wish I had a crystal ball and I say where things are going. I have a tremendous amount of respect for, let's say, Jana Lieber, who has to run this organization, you know, the MTA, and push hard in this political environment for funding of the capital budget. The capital budget for the MTA is critical to keeping the system running and the passengers moving safely in a clean and safe and sustainable matter. And really, there is not a lot of clarity there. So the need is great and the money needs to flow. We do a lot of structural repair in the system. It's critical. This system is the lifeblood of New York City. We all know that. But without funding, it will be the downfall of New York City if this system is not maintained and kept in a state of good repair.
We're feeling and thinking the same. And it's a challenge. But you know what? Hopefully, if there was ever a city that's going to overcome a challenge, it's...
Oh, we will. We absolutely will. It's just that we're dealing in this moment right now with a lot of uncertainty coming from the federal government. So,
very cool, Mike. Well, I appreciate your time. Before I let you go, two things. One, I want to give you an opportunity. You said maybe you'd want to ask me a question. Is there anything you want to ask me or talk about? Or otherwise, I have a lightning round and then we'll wrap up and get out of here.
I'd really like to know what keeps you inspired. You're a young guy in this industry. I don't know, are you 30? How old are you, 35?
Yeah, 30.
Yeah,
or no, 36. I just turned 36.
36. Okay. So you know a lot of people. You really put yourself out there. Where do you see yourself in 20 years?
I'll start with the first question. What keeps me inspired and what I really love is the opportunity to impact people in a positive way. And we do that in a lot of different avenues at the company. So like one is we have something called Infinite Cares. We pick a charitable organization every month and we donate to it. And I'm trying to push that further to also have like a quarterly activity where we can go and volunteer at some, like as a company. And so like that, I don't know, that just motivates me. Like the ability to be grateful and go out and help others that maybe don't have as much as we have. I also really love like the education front. So we do a lot of scholarships. So I have an endowed scholarship with the Society of American Military Engineers. I do an ACEC scholarship every year. I do a scholarship at my high school, which I present and I love it. It's like one of those mornings I go back and I remember sitting in those seats because it's the same cafeteria that like I went to high school in and doing that. But the place that I think we're most impactful or I'm most impactful is actually with my team and seeing their growth and my own growth like with them. But like the company we were 10 years ago, we're not today. And the company that I hope to be in 20 years, to answer your other question, you know, is not the company we are today. And that's, it's all really exciting. Where do I want to be in 20 years? Lots of places, but hopefully continuing to grow the company, maybe more regional, national type of environment. I'm recently just excited about like M&A stuff, and not that we have the wherewithal to do anything big, but I think that's exciting, potentially, to a way to grow. But you mentioned a lot of times, be curious and love to learn. And I actually made this my year of learning, like a conscious decision. That's my theme of the year. And so far, I've taken an AI course, which was absolutely incredible. I just finished a finance course. So that was like me starting to understand, like, what is the capital stack, right? And how do public and private markets like intersect and work? And what is alpha and what is beta? And like these things I'd heard in conversation, because fortunately I'm normally talking to like intelligent people, but things I like didn't really understand, you know, and I would just nod along like, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And now I can kind of understand it a little bit more. So I hope I continue to learn. That's kind of what inspires me. I don't know, getting better every day. I feel like that sounds cliche.
And I see it in you. I see you get better. I've known you for several years now, and I see the growth of you personally. I've seen the growth of your company, and I'm excited to see the growth in 20 years. There's no doubt in my mind that you will be a national company, maybe even international at some point. So just keep on keeping your head down and being curious and plodding along, and you're going to do it. There's no doubt in my mind. So, but take the time to enjoy your family, enjoy your life, have balance there. Don't get so wrapped up in it, because the bigger you get, in a lot of ways, the harder it gets. The problems do multiply the bigger you get.
Yeah, there is a happy median. And I really try to schedule time out for the family. Unfortunately or unfortunately, my family is in this industry. So a lot of the industry time we spend, we are spending together, you know.
That's nice.
But it is fun. We really enjoy it. But I appreciate the kind words. And yeah, just advice for everybody, right? If you have a vision or a mission or a goal, apply yourself to reach it, and you probably can.
Definitely can.
All right, let's go through our lightning round, and then we'll wrap this up here. So, do you speak another language, Mike?
No, I didn't.
Okay. No, that's fine.
As an Italian American, I don't know why my dad didn't teach it to me.
Well, I'm sure you enough to answer this. So the lightning round question is, what's your favorite word in another language? Do you have a favorite word?
I can't say it.
No. Right.
I could say it. Fangul.
Perfect answer. Do you watch movies or do you watch TV? What do you do in your spare time?
I'm a big CNBC guy. I love to watch the markets. That's something I really enjoy. I get a lot of insight of, I really get my news from following the markets. There's intelligence in the markets that I appreciate. So that's something that I enjoy. I'm not such a big movie guy.
No, that was perfect. Yeah, CNBC. And I remember actually we were meeting in your office and you had it on the TV, and like, that was one of the times I was like, wow, I really should pay more attention to this kind of stuff, because I don't. I mean, I check the market every morning just to see if it's up or down, but I don't pay any deep attention to it. All right, last lightning round question. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Oh, I'd like to be able to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm an observer. So I'm like, what a better place to observe than from the sky.
That's awesome. Well, Mike, I want to thank you again for being on. I know you're super busy and we didn't even talk about, but you guys work on so many incredible projects, and it's great to be a partner. And even when we're not, it's just great to see you guys succeed and deliver some amazing products to all the clients you work with.
I appreciate you doing this, Eric, and keep it up. It's a great thing to do for the industry and kind of develop a knowledge base from the people you speak to.
Yeah, I learn a lot. You said it during the show, right? You can learn something from everyone. And I do believe that. And I always learn something from these episodes. So with that, I'll say thank you. Thank the audience. And we'll include any resources we mentioned in today's show notes. Thanks for listening, and keep an eye out for our next episode. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Building Better Futures. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.